Hey, this episode is a special edition about my novel, Crossing the Continental Divide. If you want to download the book and read it first, just go over to djmcloud.com/novel. Welcome to episode number 60. This episode is going to be about the novel that I wrote in November. I wrote a short novel. It's about 28,400 words, somewhere around there. And I was somewhat inspired to write by the National Novel Writing Month. If you go back a couple episodes to number 57, you should be able to hear Jessica and I talking about it then. Well, I didn't write 50,000 words, but I wrote 28,000, and I think maybe the story concludes fairly quickly, but in a way, it's a fairly complete work. You know, like Moby Dick is like 216,000 words or something, but there are novels like The Great Gatsby and The Hobbit that are more in the range of 50,000. So this is a short novel, and I wrote about a musician, a DJ, and he is trying to get his way into the Chicago area house music scene, and he's also looking for love, traveling around to Michigan, California. He's based in Cleveland. There's some parts in different areas, including the Chicago suburbs, in Detroit for a little while. So anyway, I guess I could go pretty much into the plot, more or less, and describe it. Now, the story basically starts where Yas is hanging out with Yemin, and they have some adventures around the Cleveland area, like hang out at a pizza and beer joint with friends of Yemin's from high school, and Yas has to go to church to meet his cousin because he needs to get... that's how he can get Brown's tickets, and then he needs to meet him there. And then he runs into his aunt, who's a nun at church. And then a number of, different incidents happen around town. But before long, they're traveling because Yas... first he goes to Detroit. He meets a really cool woman. He goes to a concert by a really cool house DJ named Orgetorix. And so then he comes back, and then after that he gets an opportunity to go to a gig, open for his friend Yemin, and it's in a suburb of Chicago called Palestine. And then there's some time when they go up to Western Michigan. At this point, they're actually going up to a cabin that's owned by Eamon's grandparents. So Yemin actually, he takes Yas to that place in Western Michigan. Like, Yemin has pet parakeets, and so his grandparents happen to be watching him at that point. And then they go and they eat pancakes and do a crossword puzzle with Eamon's grandpa and Eamon's grandma, and the rest of them talk about the Beach Boys for a while. And then after that, they go back to Chicago because there's this very attractive singer that Yemin is into. And so basically Yas is going there to be his wingman, and the friend of Shamira, who is the woman that Yemin likes, is is really cool, but he actually, Yas decides he's a lot more interested in a singer named Brenda. Now, Brenda actually is the woman that he falls in love with after following her band around and becoming a roadie. And as they travel through the upper Midwest and Northwest, they you know, they take a liking to each other, and then in San Francisco they have some very intimate time together. And that's kind of a summary of the outlines of the plot. Next up, I'm gonna read an excerpt or two from the text. The scenic drive that the wooded path connected to was a road that ran as far as a bend where vacation cabins are located in a cluster. Some kind of state law or something prohibited the new construction of directly on beachfront property in the very early 1980s. Cliffside buildings like the one Yas and Yeman were staying in were allowed, still. But of the couple dozen or so of the cabins at this spot, maybe half were built on the beach. This had proven problematic for the owners of a handful of these houses when Lake Michigan rose drastically in the mid-1980s. About four of the houses were gutted. The waves of the lake mercilessly plowing into the cinder block lake-exposed basements. These houses were built into the sides of the remnant of a mighty sand dune. Like the land that is now Golden Gate Park, the lakeside here, still miles south of Silver Lake's Dune State Park, once were guarded by a dune that required a non-trivial effort to climb. Over and over again with the relentless force of a windy Great Lake. Eamon wasn't a sailor, but his grandpa was, and he had been informed as a young child that the lake was not to be messed with. Swimming was only to be done with others, never alone, and in fact, Eamon's grandparents liked to take him to the little swimming area, one of those small lake metal three-quarter rectangles, which formed physical, grabbable, floating sides for a virtual pool in the lake where the small kids could stay inside the rectangle and maybe the older ones could jump outward into the lake at Stony Lake, a smallish, medium-sized lake, which is to say a small lake for Michigan, but not for, say, Indiana. Tucked in along the edges were numerous homes, sort of peeking out of the woods with their little piers and small boats. He extended often in the distance from this swimming area and its northwest corner, because of its curviness and slight narrowness at its end. Under a road bridge, a short river flowed its water out into the lake. After the swimming area was a small general store, one of the kinds of places that still exists in 2012 in Michigan, where Confederate battle flag hats sit alongside Route 69 shirts, live bait, and cold beer. An air of retail improvisation hung about the place as displays had no common origin in their construction, and all sorts of people could be behind the counter, from a cute little shy young woman to some redneck guy with fishing hat and one of those cheap cigars with the plastic applicator tip bouncing unlit in his mouth. At this point, he couldn't recall exactly where, but around here, Eamon remembered a long time ago going to St. Jack's Church somewhere nearby. It was one of the coolest churches he had seen, a large single room with cabin-style planks protruding from the ceiling. It had a simple white altar at the front, and an enormous priest wielded a simple but elegant clay chalice, quite unlike the bejeweled pimp cups of many priests. He called it, quote, the Prairie Church, unquote, although the name didn't stick with his family. As the interstates snaked and faded through Toledo, Yas took one of those vague, loopy exits and managed to find a volcano gas station, plenty of pumps. How much of this neighborhood is abandoned? Apartment buildings with scraggly edges of broken brick sat isolated between the decrepit road on one side and the reconquista of nature on the yard side. Toledo is a yard town. Everyone seems to have some sort of yard, kind of a nature box. The best haphazard layouts in Ohio neighborhoods reveal strange secrets. Often plots of at least 10 feet by 10 feet sit fenced on all sides from neighboring yards, guarded by trees on a side and shrubs or a fence on another. Piles of cans or abandoned lawnmowers add a farm-like junk clutter. These little spots are very important. A little bit of shelter and free range for the animals, like possums and squirrels and cats, that would be in the neighborhood anyway. The jungle of mysterious junk and grateful animals was just providing a deep backdrop of energy, a vague and disproportionate reassurance against the despair and utter brokenness of the area. Yelling, random yelling, beat up cars, obviously insane people muttering along the sidewalks. Everything here was immediate to us. But he was thirsty, wondering if he should abandon his sedan, even locked, even for a second. He nonetheless went into the gas station store, where two people hunched just to the right of the entrance playing no cash payout video poker. Orgetorix had put on an energetic show, working up to a heavy, steady beat and blasting, pulsating bass before being joined on stage by a couple of French singers named Gilliatt and Drott. Gilliatt was a surprisingly effective hype man, lecturing the audience on the work, determination, virtue, and perseverance needed to truly live out the house music lifestyle. Waves lapped up at Baker Beach, way down the cliff. As we ride the bikes to clink, to clink, and cut onto those interior roads, passing by that spot in the woods near a campground with the ocean swell sounds faint in the distance, they roll by the shelter for campers and the sand dune along the road and the interior side with the barely decommissioned artillery range, where Eamon had told Yoss that his betta fish, Fisherson, that he had owned during his grad school days, was buried. And then they rode up to the backside of the large abandoned building that still guards the end of 15th Avenue. Some sort of former medical facility or barracks or something had been left for years, five stories and so, and a city block footprint, built unit, the hillside, just a chain-link fence with holes between the parking lots, still used by Presidio visitors, making it a busy lot next to an abandoned structure. And the building out front and the back where Yoss rode up to the back of the hill, put the back entrance several stories up where the building connected to the hill via an old metal bridge. DJMCloud.com, and this has been Podcast 60 with me, Dan McKeown. You can find more information about the music at the website. And this has been recorded December 6th, 2012.